But I did want to, because Leslie visited Fission.
Oh, yes, I did, yeah.
The PLS project, which is pretty much contiguous to Next Gen's Arrow, and there's probably some sort of uranium camp developing there when youth euro places are not at $25 a pound or whatever today. So I did want to ask Mickey, because Mickey is a bit of a has been a little bullish on uranium. Many of us have over the last three or four years. And so maybe a little bit of commentary on what you think about it now.
About uranium?
Yeah.
I hate to say this because last year I gave talks in New York, Atlanta, and New Orleans on why I remain a uranium bull. And I was highly and still am highly strongly invested in U.S. producers. But right now it's really hard to see the end in sight. You know, we got a $26, even went to $25 spot price. Cameco goes this at yesterday. Or
yeah, I did. I reported on that one.
The toughest market we've ever seen.
Yeah.
That said,
it's a good buy.
You know, it's a contrarian play. Cameco probably is a really good buy right now. The world needs uranium. It's just there is no short-term demand. And when that's going to turn, it's likely, we've seen this before, when it turns, the price of uranium can go up really fast.
Yeah.
You'll see analyst estimates from 2017 to 2020, and maybe some are going further out on that, when it's going to turn. But, you know, the thing about being a contrarian is you have to have patience. You're in early, and you have to have patience. So I can't give you a time frame. I don't know enough. It is one of the most opaque markets.
It is.
And bear in mind that it's an order of magnitude more than transparent than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
At least today we all get daily spot prices of uranium. 5 years ago, you got a weekly spot price.
Well, it was like lithium or something.
Yeah,
right?
So it's really hard to know. But
well, yeah, I covered the Cameco thing, or their quarters, I should say, second quarters. And a couple of things that stood out was Tim Gitzel, who is the president and CEO, pretty much echoed what you just said. When he stated that they don't know either when the market's going to turn around. He said there's not a lot of silver lining right now.
Yeah.
Like, it's just... Yeah. It's a bad time to be in uranium. Like, it's just bad. And he also, one of the other kind of illuminating things that came out of their conference call and their quarterlies was that they actually had a utility pretty much renege on a supply
contract. Yeah, I read that.
Northern
Miners.
Yeah, that they actually had, which I've never seen. I've never seen that before. And then, so on and I heard them talk about it on the conference call, and the obvious question from the analyst is like, well, is this a pattern? Like, are all the utilities gonna start renegotiating or canceling? And he's like, no. They're like, hopefully not. They didn't say hopefully not, but I'm like, this is what I read. And then also that they were saying that it's with some of the analyst reports, it was probably a U.S. utility that pulled, or Japanese, one of the two.
Yeah, it could be U.S. because there have been a couple of plants shut down.
Or are
shutting down.
Yeah.
They're not going to shut down immediately, but these uranium contracts usually go out, well, the long-term contracts can go out a long ways, but a power plant usually has 1 to 3 years stockpile because you can't just turn the things off.
I think this contract was through 2022. It was 2017 to 2022 were the years that they pretty much canceled the utility pulled out of. So interesting stories. Like, I mean, you pull that stuff out of the quarterlies and they try to just, you know, it's not a big deal or whatever, but that's like really telling about uranium spot. Like, that's crazy. That's wild. Like,
can
that was
ask
the first
a really
time.
Dumb question though, because I don't know this. Why is it that the contract price usually kind of correlates with a big rise in uranium prices? Because you mentioned that earlier. You said because it was...
No, the contract price was way above spot. Like, far above spot.
Yeah, the contract price is...
the price of uranium really high
very
quickly?
Because since Fukushima in 2011, the uranium price has fallen 66%.
Yeah.
Over the last year, it's fallen 25, U308 spot. So, I mean, even if you look at the contracts that were negotiated, we're talking about, contracts that can run up to 10 years.
Hey, there's uranium producers living on contracts that were negotiated in 2006.
2006. Really? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, like, because, like, if you look back, like, even when Mickey was talking about uranium in 2014, it was at, what, $60? Lower?
It was lower. I would say it's probably $40.
40? Yeah. I see. I remember the 60, 65, and everyone's like, ah, it's low. And then all of a sudden the bottom fell out of it. But that would have been 2013, 2012.
Well, then I was pre-Fukushima.
Yeah,
at $73 right before Fukushima.
Yeah, yeah.
It held in at 50, 55 for a while, but it's...
A contract that was negotiated 5 years ago could easily have been negotiated at $65 a pound. And if we're looking at 26 today, the utility is looking at that.
Yeah, and so the long-term contract price, I haven't really looked at it, paid much attention lately, but the long-term contract price is going to be probably a $40 to $44 right now.
Yeah, that's what Camcos were in there.
And so they do that because you need security of supply. A nuclear power plant is its greatest concern is security of supply, and the amount of fuel that fuel costs about 10% of the overall cost of operating the facility. Yeah, Tell us about your trip to PLS. I've never been to Western Athabasca, Southwestern. Yeah. I've been a bunch to the east side, but
yeah. Well, we went to Fort McMurray, and you know, saw the fire devastation, right? I mean, it was insane. It was just fire, like burnout everywhere. So that was interesting. And then we flew into site. And the coolest thing that really like made me kind of laugh a little bit is, you know, you have the Athabasca Basin. I've never seen it before. And it's like full of like the richest sources of uranium out there. It's not so ridiculously high grade. Yeah. It's mind blowing.
And size too.
But so funnily enough that it's actually just covered by a veneer of like really young sediments. Because God forbid if that was actually exposed at the surface of the earth, that's fishing country, right? Like there's fish lakes and everything, and everyone goes out there with their buddies, cracks a few beers, throw in a few lines, and have themselves a day.
Well, you can't
get for that like sedimentary cover.
You can't get here from or there from here. That's the problem. So in the middle of nowhere.
It is.
You can't really get there.
Yeah.
Like. Yeah. I mean, there's a few fishing lodges up there, but for the most part, you can't get there.
Yeah, no, I know. But it was just kind of funny to see that there was actually something protecting these deposits from interacting with the environment.
The
it's just
glacial
like this insulating,
till.
Yeah. It's this insulating glacial cover,
till,
you know?
Because PLS is right on the edge of the basin, so you don't have however many meters or hundreds of meters or even thousands of meters if you get in the center of the basin, the Athabasca sandstone, you only got glacial till for cover there.
That's right. I know. It's crazy. So what they're doing now is that they've got the high grade section and they're stepping along strike of that structure to kind of find more resources. You know, and so the main deposit is underneath the lake, and so they're actually testing some spots that's on land.
Yeah, so
and they're still testing some
so
spots
you want,
on the lake
you know,
too.
The capex of building uranium mine on land versus draining a lake
can be $300 million, $250 million to build a dam.
So that's what shut down Midwest.
Yeah,
crazy,
right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Up in the northeastern part of the basin was the capex of draining the building a copper dam and draining
crazy.
A lake over an ore body that has high grade 11% zone that's if it wasn't underneath a shallow lake could be mined tomorrow.
Well, the lake is really shallow, but still it's going to cost them $250
to
build that.
Yeah,
and so that's why I think that they're stepping out in land now. The issue is that when you look at the geological map of the deposit and the signatures and the different data sets to show where that structure that hosts the mineralization goes, you can see that the mineralization is focused along the jogs in the fault. So areas where there's going to be a little bit more like space created for the mineralization to fill into. And so they're like, oh, it kind of extends. We're going to test around the length. And I said, well, you know, where else can you find more jogs along that structure? Because it seems like there's a couple, but it's not all, like, you know,
these are all the conductors sawtooth. That they have.
So Next Gen Aero has like 200 million pounds. These guys have 100 million pounds, but Next Gen has a lot, like, seems like they have a lot more room to build their resource.
But the thing is, they're so close together that anybody who's looking at this thing is going to say,
oh, buy two for one, yeah.
Yeah, but you're not building two facilities there.
No way.
Yeah.
My question is,
how come they're not joining? Why don't they merge?
They hate each other.
Yeah, my question is,
I'm just going to ask that. Like, do they not like each other?
No.
Is there a critical mass to build a mill out there?
Not yet.
There is no mill.
Not yet.
And so they are competing with Eastern Athabasca, where you've got three mills.
Yeah.
And one of those mills is not fully utilized. And so what happens if you find, or you are finding, or you have already found
more
ore over there on the eastern side, where there are mills
that just delays,
and one mill which is not fully utilized,
hungry mill.
Yeah. Like, what's going to be the motivation to go spend however many, whatever the CapEx is going to be on the west side where there is no mill? There used to be a mill.
Yeah.
There's no longer a mill there. It was totally dismantled. Mm-hmm. And there may, I don't know, but there's probably a mill site there that would be easily permitted, but that's up the highway quite a ways.
Yeah, quite a ways. And I mean, like, it's not really material you're trucking around, like across.
Well, you can.
You can.
You
no.
cannot.
No, you can't.
Truck
more than 2% uranium ore on provincial highways.
With good reason.
Yeah, you can truck on private roads. Yeah. You can truck whatever grade you want to.
So you're not trucking that stuff across
the
basin.
And that's the other issue with open pit mines. So PLS versus Aero. You know, Aero is going to be an underground mine, whereas, you know, PLS, they have 18% exposed on the surface. They're going to be bulk mining that in an open pit.
And then they have to downblend it so they can put it on a provincial road, assuming that's how they get it to a mill, because the province is going to have to participate in this stuff. And you got to downblend it. You got to essentially blend it with waste to be able to transport it on a highway.
You know what?
Unless it's your own private highway. Maybe that's the answer. I don't know.